"You might," he said at length, "answer my questions more precisely without going off into unessentials. What I asked was how you stood the journey under such hard conditions, whether you suffered much from the drought, whether your water supply held out, whether you were attacked by roving bands or a dust abubu, whether anybody was overcome by the heat. That was what I asked." "We got on reasonably well, Adon. Thank you for the kind inquiry. Our train was strong against roving bands. We were well supplied with water. We scarcely lost even an ass, and we were all in good health. Just one dust abubu of medium severity was the most we had to bear." "So much the better. My inquiry was not kind. It was strictly practical. A journey like yours is, after all, not so uncommon. There is much travel in the world. 17 days' journeys, even 7 times 17, are no rarity, and they have to be put behind the traveller step by step, for seldom does the earth spring to meet him. Merchants take the road from Gilead, leading from the town of Baisan through Yanin and the valley of... Wait, I knew at once, it will come back to me. The valley of Dothan, whence they meet the great caravan route from Damascus to Leyun and Ramleh, and the port of Karati. You had it better. You simply came down from Hebron to Gaza, and then along the coast down towards our land. As you say, O Lord, you know all. I know a great deal, partly because of my natural shrewdness, partly by other means which a man like me knows how to command. But at Gaza, where you probably joined the caravan, begins the worst part of the trip. You have to survive an iron city and an accursed sea-bottom covered with skeletons. We did not look round, and with God's help we came safe through the horrors. I am glad to hear it. Perhaps you had a column of fire to guide you? There was one, once, that went on in front of us. It collapsed, and then came the dust abubu of moderate severity. You refrain from boasting of its terrors, but it might easily have been the death of you. It concerns me that travellers are exposed to such hardship on the way down to Egypt. I say that quite objectively. But you thought yourselves lucky when you got into the regions of our watchtowers and bastions? Yes, we counted ourselves fortunate and praised God aloud for our being spared. Were you afraid at the fortress of Thel and its armed troops? We feared only in the sense of awe. And what happened to you there? They did not forbid us to pass when we told them we were buyers come to buy corn from this granary, that our wives and children may live and not die, but they separated us from the others. I wanted to hear about that. Were you surprised at the measure? It had not happened before, to your knowledge, to say nothing of your being the object. At least, they had provision put up for you in full number, all 10 of you, if 10 can be called a full number. They did not separate any of you from each other, but only from the others that entered with you? So was it, Lord. They told us we could not buy bread for our money except at Mempi, balance of the lands, and from yourself, Lord of bread and friend of the harvest of God. Correct. They put you on the road? You had good journey from the frontier to the city of the swaddled one? Very good, Adon. They kept an eye on us. Men who came and went directed us to lodgment and rest-houses with our animals, and in the morning, when we offered to pay, the host would not take it. Two kinds of people receive free lodgment and board, the guest of honor and the prisoner. How do you like Egypt? It is a land of marvels, great vizier. Like Nimrod's is its might and magnificence. It is splendid in form and adornment, whether towering or extended flat. Its temples are overpowering, and its tombs touch the skies. Often our eyes ran over. Not so much, I hope, that you neglected to ply your trade and task, or were prevented from spying and reconnoitering and drawing your conclusions. Your word, O Lord, is dark to us. So you pretend not to know why you were set apart, and why people kept an eye on you and brought you before my face? Gladly would we know, great Lord, but we know not. You put on a face as though you never dreamed. Does not your conscience whisper to you that you are under a cloud, that a suspicion rests upon you, a sinister one, and that your villainy is open to my eyes? What say you, Lord? You are a Pharaoh. What suspicion? That you are spies, Joseph cried out. He struck the arm of his lion-footed chair with his hand and stood up. He had said, Dayalu, spy, a heavily offensive Akkadian word, and he pointed at them in their faces with his fan. Dayalu, the interpreter hollowly repeated. They started back as one man, thunderstruck, indignant. What say you? They repeated in a growling chorus. I said what I said. Spies you are, come to spy out the secret barrenness of the land, that you may discover it and reveal the way for invasion and plunder. That is my conviction. If you can gainsay it, do so. Reuben spoke, all the others frantically gesturing to him to set them right. He shook his head slowly and said, What is there, sovereign lord, to gainsay? Only because it is you who say it, is it worth a word, but otherwise only a shrug of the shoulders. Even the great your suspicion is false. We do not cast down our eyes before it, but as you see, we look up freely and honestly to your face, and even in polite reproof that you can so misread us. For we know you in your greatness, but you know us not in our good faith. Look at us, and let your eyes be opened at the sight. We are all sons of one man, an excellent man in the land of Canaan, a king of herds, and a friend of God. We are true men. We came in amongst others coming to buy food, for good silver rings which you can weigh on exact scales, food for our women and children. That is our aim. Spies, by the God of gods, have your servants never been. But you are, answered Joseph, and stamped with his sandaled foot. What a man like me has in his mind, he sticks to. You are come to discover the shame of the land, that it may be harmed with the sickle. It is my belief you have this commission from wicked kings of the East. To disprove it rests with you. But far from doing so, what that tall tower there has said is merely to assert baldly that it is not true. That is no evidence to satisfy a man like me. But consider in mercy, Lord, said one of them, that it rather rests with you to give evidence for such an accusation than for us to disprove it. Who is that speaking so subtly out of your midst, and piercing me with his eyes? For some time I have remarked your darting eye like a snake's. How are you called? Dan, by your good favor, Adon. Dan, I am called, born of a maid upon the knees of the mistress. I am pleased to hear it. And so, Master Dan, to judge by the subtlety of your words, you set yourself up for a judge, and in your own case to boot? But here it is myself who sit as judge, and the accused must make himself clean before me. Have you sand-dwellers and sons of misery any notion of the parlous balance of this pearl of great price among all the lands over which I am set, and must render account of its safety before God's Son in his palace? It is ever threatened by the lustful covetousness of the desert-born, who spy after its weakness. Bedu, Mentiu, and Pezdiu, shall the Kabirites deal here as they have dealt time and again beyond the borders in Pharaoh's provinces? I know of cities they have fallen upon like mad bulls, and in their fury strangled the man and slain the oxen in savage wantonness. You see, I know more than you thought. Two or three of you, I will not say all, look to me quite capable of such games. And shall I take your bare word that you mean no ill, and were not aiming at the secret parts of our land? They shifted about among themselves, and took counsel with excited gesturings. In the end it was Judah to whom they beckoned to answer and represent them. He did it with the dignity of the tried and tested man. Lord, said he, let me speak before you, and set forth our state according to the exact truth, that you may know we are true men. Lo, we, your servants, are 12 brothers, sons of one father, in the land... Stop, cried Joseph, who had sat down, but now stood up again. What? So now, all of a sudden, you are 12 men? So then you have not dealt in truth when you said you were 10. In the land of Canaan, finished Judah firmly. His face wore a look which seemed to say that he found it uncalled for and premature to interrupt him when he was about to launch out into a full explanation. 12 sons are we, your servants, or we were. We have never said this was all of us as we stood before you. We only bore witness that all 10 of us were one man's sons. At home, we were originally 12, but the youngest brother, not born of any of our mothers but from a fourth, who has been dead as many years as he is old, has stopped at home with our father, and one of us is no longer with us. What do you mean by no longer with us? Gone, Lord, in his early years, lost to our father and to us, lost in the world. He must have been an adventurous fellow. But what have I got to do with him? Now, the little one, your youngest brother, he is not lost, not got out of hand. He is at home, Lord, always at home, and at our father's hand. From which I conclude that this old father of yours is alive and well? You have asked that before, Adon, by your leave, and we told you yes. Not at all. It may well be that I asked you once about your father's life, but about his well-being I am now asking you for the first time. Things are very well, answered Judah, with your servant, our father, under all the circumstances. But there has been hardship in the world for some time now, as my lord well knows. For since the heavens denied their watery blessings once and then twice, the scarcity presses the harder the longer it goes on in all the lands, and so in ours. Even to speak of scarcity is to make small the evil, for there is no grain for love or money, for either seed or bread. Our father is rich. He lives on an easy footing. How rich and how easy? Has he, for instance, an ancestral tomb? As you say, Lord, Machpelah, the double hollow, there sleep our forefathers. For instance, does he live on such a footing that he has an oldest servant, a steward, as I have, who is a doctor as well? So is it, Highness. He had a wise and much-traveled first servant, Eliezer by name. Sheol hides him. He bowed his head and died. But he left 2 sons, Damasek and Elinos, and the elder, Damasek, has taken the place of the deceased. He is now called Eliezer. You don't say, said Joseph. You don't say. And his eyes were brimming for some while as his gaze traveled above their heads into space. Then he asked, why do you interrupt yourself, Lionhead, in your attempted justification? Do you not know how to go on? Judah smiled forbearingly. He did not say that it was not he who kept interrupting. Your servant was in act, and remains ready to tell you all our circumstances and the kind of journey we had, in order and faithfully, that you may see we deal in truthfulness. Numerous is our house, not precisely as the sands of the sea, but very numerous. We number in the 70s, for we are all heads under our father's headship. We are all married, and blessed with... All 10 of you married? All 11 of us, Lord, and blessed... What? Your youngest, too, is married and the head of a family? Lord, as you say it, from 2 women he has 8 children. Impossible, cried Joseph, without waiting for the man to translate. He struck his palm on the arm of his chair and burst out laughing. The Egyptian officials behind him laughed, too, out of the purest sycophancy. The brothers smiled anxiously. My Sakme, Joseph's steward, gave him a private nudge in the back. You nodded your head, said Joseph, drying his eyes. So I understood that your youngest is married and a father, too. That is fine. I am only laughing because it is really very good and something to laugh at, because one always thinks of the youngest as a little chap, not as a husband and father. That is what made me laugh, but you see I have stopped already. This business is much too serious and suspicious to be a laughing matter. And that you, Lionhead, have got stuck again in your defense seems to me a most suspicious thing. With your permission, answered Judah, I will go on with it without stopping and connectedly. For the dearness of all things, which one might better call a dearth, because there is no food at all at any price, this catastrophe weighs upon the country. The herds perish, and on our ears strikes the cry of our children for bread. Which, Lord, is the bitterest of all sounds to a human ear, and hardest to bear, save it may be the complaint of venerable age that he misses his due and daily comfort? For we heard our father say that he was not far from having his lamp go out, so that he must sleep in the dark.
Unheard of, said Joseph. That is a vexation, not to say an abomination. Have you people let it come to that? No provision, no looking ahead, no measures against calamity, which, after all, does exist in the world and can take on presentness at any moment? No imagination, no fear, no sense of the past, living like the beast of the field from day to day, mindful of nothing that is not before your face and eyes, until the father in his old age must go without his habitual comforts. Shame! Have you then no education, no history? Do you not know that under some circumstances the blade cannot shoot, and all blossoming things lie in bonds, because the fields bring forth only salt, and no herb grows, nor any smallest sprout of grain? That life is numb with grief? The bull leaps not on the cow, nor does the ass cover the she-ass? Have you never heard of floods that cover the earth, so that only the exceeding wise man survives because he has made himself to swim upon the returned primeval flood? Must then, before you heed, everything be before your eyes, and face present words to you, which was merely turned away, until your dearest loved old age must want oil for its lamp? They hung their heads. Go on, he said. That man who was speaking, let him continue. But let me hear no more of your father sleeping in the dark.
That is only a figure, Adon. It means that he too suffers from the hard times and has no bread for the offering. We saw many folk gird themselves up and set out for this country to buy from Pharaoh's granaries, and they brought back food, for only in Egypt is there corn and a grain market. But for long we would not come before our father with the suggestion that we too gird our loins and come down likewise to do business and buy. Why would you not? He has the fixed ideas of his old age, Lord, all sorts of opinions about everything, and so about the land of your gods. He thinks his own thoughts about Mizraim, and has a prejudice against its customs and ways.
One must shut one's eyes to that and not notice.
He probably would not have let us come if we had asked him, so he thought it better counsel to wait until he noticed the scarcity himself.
Perhaps that ought not to be either, that you put your heads together about the father. It looks as if you were playing fast and loose with him.
There was nothing else to do, and of course we saw his side glances, and how he would open his mouth to speak, and then shut it again. Finally he said to us, Why do you look at each other with side glances?
Lo, I hear, and the rumor has reached me, that in the Southland grain is cheap, and there is a market there. Up with you, and sit not on your backsides till all of us are lost. Choose out one or two of you by lot, and on whom it falls, Simeon or Dan, he may gird his loins and travel down with the travelers and buy food for your wives and children, that we may live and not die.
Good, we brothers answered him. But it is not enough that two should go, for the question of need will arise. We must all go and show the number of our heads, that the children of Egypt may see we need corn not by the ephah but by the homer. So he said, Then all 10 of you go. We told him it would be better if we all went, and show that we are 11 households under his headship, otherwise we should be given too little. But he answered and said, Are you out of your wits? I see you want to make me childless. Do you not know that Benjamin must be at home and at hand? Suppose an accident were to befall him on the way. 10 of you go, or else we sleep in the dark. So we came.